I have started recording so that I won't forget.
Good. Excellent. We'll wait a few more moments. I've got a handful of people joining. Many Steves. That's good.
Hello.
The link has been posted in chat. Let us know if you came in late and can't see that as well. It is on the meeting invite and it's in Rocket Chat as well. So I'll do the introductions today and then just set up and I'll take notes through it. Everyone else can just discuss and think of all the great thoughts that are coming through. So, Peacekeeper is joining us today. Welcome, Marcus.
Hey, hello, everyone.
All right. Let's get started. This is the Aries Working Group call for May 29th. This call is being recorded. I'll start with the normal introductions. Remember, a reminder for everyone that this is a Linux Foundation meeting and therefore the antitrust policy applies. That's visible on your screen right now. As well, I've put a link into the Hyperledger Code of Conduct, which we should all have reviewed, taken a look at, and be following at all times as part of these meetings. There is an attendee list, so if you go in and have a Linux Foundation account, you can log into the wiki, add your name to the attendees list, so please go ahead and do that. And with that, that's part of the introduction, and welcome to everyone. The other part is introduction. So looks like we have a number of new folks on the line again. There's a number of names I'm not recognizing. So we'll leave a moment here for people to introduce themselves. We'd welcome hearing about who you are, what you're doing, and your interest. And we'll just leave it open. People can jump in and go ahead. No pressure to if you don't want to.
Hi, I'm Steve Graber, and we're in Northeastern Ohio, and we are just getting into the DID and blockchain stuff, and have worked some with the Vaughn Networks stuff and interacted with some of the sovereign stuff a little bit, but looking to learn more about how to technically do that so we can help companies in the area and hospitals and doctors. We're working with a doctor right now in a municipality to try and help people get into distributed IDs.
Excellent. Thanks.
Hello, this is Albert from Validated ID. We are a sovereign steward in Spain and working in our SSI solutions.
Excellent. Welcome, Albert. Anyone else want to say hi?
Hi, this is Drummond Reed from Evernham and the Sovereign Foundation and co-editor of the DID spec and here to listen very carefully for anything that might actually need to be reflected in this bottom layer that we're building on top of. So very, very happy to see the size of this call.
Do you have much experience in this area, Drummond?
I'm sort of a newbie, and I could learn a lot about this.
Good stuff. Well, welcome.
Thanks.
I'm having fretting over the fact that we didn't do our ritual of reading the it's a trust policy.
Yes, we're not doing that. We're just looking at it. It's available for everyone, but it's not required to be read.
That is correct. No. It is never a requirement to read it out. Though you will notice
we had such a good streak going.
Usually we do put it on the page.
We did break the streak last week. I was very deliberate about that.
Oh.
Carl, you want to go ahead?
I was going to say you can go watch past recording if you're really missing it.
It is.
No, good. I think it'll be good for us to get more time and get going.
All right. Last call for anyone who wants to introduce. Okay. Couple of announcements that I wanted to highlight today. I don't know if anyone else has, but BCGov, which I'm a part of, the team here is looking at collaborating with groups that have mobile agents that could be ready for a live implementation in roughly the end of the summer. So if anyone has that, we'd be interested in talking. We're going to have a kind of a formal way to collaborate with some teams. And so if you have an agent and might meet those qualifications, that would be great. Please let me know. I've put a link on the page. The other thing is a lot of movement in the RFCs. So the link here, Process to Move, Daniel Hardman published that last week, and it has all of the details on the steps to move a hype either from a published state in the hype repo or from a PR that has not been accepted yet into an RFC. And there have been a whole bunch of RFCs that have moved in the concepts and features, and there's a few pull requests. I put the process to accept them is a lot faster. I did a two PRs last night on taking the credential exchange hype and moving it into RFCs, and they were already accepted today. So I was happy to see that. So now we can move forward on reviewing those, adding issues, and getting those pushed through the process. So please do take a look at the RFCs that are there. If you want to grab an indie hype and help out by moving it across, follow the instructions that Daniel's provided here, and it's a pretty easy process. Any other announcements from anyone that they want to add?
Hi, Stephen. This is Carl from IDRAMP. Just a point on the agent inquiry for the BCGov case. I know you have been sharing some correspondence with our CEO. We do have, I think, a wallet in queue for that case, so heads up.
Excellent. Yeah, I sent a note to Mike yesterday, and with a bunch of the details, so that'd be great.
Excellent. Thanks.
All right. Any other announcements? Okay. I'll keep an eye on Mike's going unmuted. So welcome introductions done. So we're going to try to time box a little. So I'm going to, as well as taking notes, going to try to keep these moving along. We'll see how that goes. We tend to be a talkative group, so I won't put too much of a chill on it, but we'll try to keep time. Tobias is going to talk first on envelopes. Got about 15 minutes. Kyle on encrypted envelopes. We're going to flow into then some DIDCOM transport issues. So Sam, an introduction, and then Alexander will talk about a hype or an RFC that's been proposed about DIDCOM over XMPP. So that's the agenda we've got planned. We've got open discussion after that. So barring any questions, I will stop sharing. Tobias, you want to take over?
Yep, sure. Can everybody see my screen?
Yep.
Yep.
You can see the GitHub IRC?
Yep.
Okay, great. So essentially this IRC that was submitted this week is intent on explaining basically did common message anatomy. And what I mean by that is essentially distinguish between the two distinct layers that did common messages have as a general sort of convention. And what this IRC talks about is the concept of DIDCOM messages and how they relate to postal messages in the real world, and the fact that they have essentially an envelope level, which is basically the outer format that it's used to transmit, and then the content level, which is the actual content of the message. And this envelope level as a format itself has a series of subformats associated to it. And these subformats are designed for the different use cases in which DIDCOM messages are transmitted. So when you possess key information for your recipient in the form of a DID, usually, if you're leveraging DID infrastructure, which is what DIDCOMS is about, you've possessed the key information required to actually encrypt the message to that participant. And so when available, if you know the recipient, you will use the information. The idea with DIDCOMS is the DID doc is pretty much self-descriptive, required to prepare a DIDCOM message. And you will use the DID doc, including the key information and some other conventions that will be described in another RFC, in order to encrypt a message to that DID and send it to them. And when you encrypt it to the DID, there are multiple ways in which you can do that, which give rise to different properties for even more granular use cases. So there are certain use cases where you may want to anonymously encrypt a message to the participant, therefore not basically omitting sender information. So it's like sending a letter in the postal world and omitting the sender details in the back of it. Authenticated encryption is the authenticated version of that, where the sender information is revealed in the message. Only to the recipient, only the recipient who had the message encrypted to them is capable of seeing the sender information, however. So the postal analogy doesn't really hold up in that aspect. And then the last one is a signed encrypted format, because certain use cases are there, it is required that there should be non-repudiability at the content level of the message. The payload inside should be non-repudiable. So that use cases that require non-repudiation can be enabled. However, this format is not defined yet in terms of we have not addressed it in our encrypted envelope RFC yet, but it should be used in a sensible manner, because there are certain limitations, certain dangers in using non-repudiation globally. And the other alternative format, when you don't possess the key information for encrypting a message to a DID, is essentially when you have a public challenge that you're issuing through a mechanism such as a browser, whereby you want the challenge or the message that you're issuing to be authenticatable to the audience it's serving. So a good example is a connection invitation to, or a authentication request in browser that's generated by a QR code. If the user scans it with their mobile wallet, they want to know who generated that challenge. And so if the challenge is signed by a DID that they are aware of through a trust framework layer, then they're able to authenticate that challenge and make a decision about whether to trust it and respond to the challenge in a way that with the information required from the challenge. And so those are the two different overarching formats, but encrypted have several sort of sub-formats. You'll note here, I haven't left a note to it. There is obviously the third variation, which is a unencrypted and unsigned format. However, we have purposefully left that out of scope for now, because we don't see valid use cases of having unsigned, unencrypted messages in terms of when we don't think the only potential use cases would be relying on transport security, and we want DIDCOMs to stay away from those dependencies. So that's essentially the high level of the different pieces of Envelope level. I won't go into content level because everyone is welcome to read RFC. But that,
so, Tobias.
Yeah.
So let me do two things here. One is I should have thought of this before introducing it. And one of the things that Sam and I have talked about and we want to do, and this is the first of them, well, last week's was kind of the first of them, is sort of revisit some of the core ones for people that are new. And so we're sort of going over things that this group, the indie working group, the indie agent working group, had sort of covered. So that's a little bit of the motivation of why some of these topics are going to come up and some in the next couple of weeks.
Yeah.
And the second one was then just to, Tobias has given a great overview of the different envelope types and the different way that we are encrypting at the message level and not relying on the underlying transport to take care of encryption for us. Does anyone have any questions about it? So the other thing I wanted to do is just bump in and say, anyone have questions at this point?
Yeah, absolutely.
Sounds good.
So, I think Stephen raised a very important point. Why, and this comes back to the scope of DIDCOMs, which isn't articulated in this RFC. And the fact that we self-encapsulate the encryption is the idea that we essentially have message layer security. So we don't rely on any transport given security. We can transmit over insecure transports because we have self-encapsulated encryption when we're passing DIDCOM messages to known DIDs or to a DID that's known to the sender where it can be encrypted. The only other thing to potentially point out as well is our serialization format is currently Yoast-based, so it uses the Yoast family of specs, where we use a JWE-like structure. Kyle will articulate on that more because it is not a completely conformant JWE at this stage. And our signed unencrypted format, which is pending and that RFC is in the making, is essentially a JWS structure. So that's where the formats are created from.
So the other thing that I'd like to point out here is that Tobias is relabeling effectively, I think, what we called the wire level stuff. So wire level was sort of a name we made up, and it's not really appropriate because it's not really wire level, but it was like the foundational thing. And so calling them envelopes, I think, makes it a little bit more clear as to their purpose and the place they occupy in the stack. So I just wanted to draw that point out. I think that's a really good move.
Yep, excellent.
And this is just mostly strictly talking about just the enveloping in JSON format using JWEs, similar to what Kyle presented before. But I think so, and I know you don't want to be discuss protocols necessarily, but you know, one thing I've come to realize is the like QR codes are really insufficient. Like you can get maybe 1 KB, and after 1 KB, it gets really dense. And so, have you guys looked into that at all as far as like really when you're passing around these envelopes, is there a more compact format?
Well, the what ought to be passed in a QR code is actually a whole different discussion that we haven't really come into, but it does relate a bit to this. There isn't necessarily a compact format that we're proposing at this point, but that could come up. I think narrowing the scope of what we think is wise to pass the QR code and what is not will help figure out how to have the discussion as it applies to the envelope level.
Okay.
That makes sense.
Is there any examples?
Of what you should and what you shouldn't?
Of envelopes. Of this, a whole envelope proposal.
Yes. Kyle's going to talk about that in just a minute. And it's really the wire level stuff is better named as an envelope, the JWE style for encryption specifically.
So to be clear about where we're at in terms of we already use a non-conformant version of a JWE-like structure to serve these two use cases, and that is present in Indy from 1.8.0, I believe, in the SDK. This format is still to be completely confirmed around how we achieve non-repudiability inside a message when the encryption algorithm we're using for pack and unpack, which are these two methods here, there's some work to be done there. And then the signed unencrypted format we are not enforcing at the we're not using at the moment for the only viable protocol that we will apply it to when required will be the connection protocol. Is that the best way to summarize, Sam? Essentially, we will, in certain use cases, use the signed unencrypted envelope to wrap around a connection invitation, which is commonly passed as a QR code, but doesn't need to be passed as a QR code.
Yes.
And that may leverage this envelope level for added security on connection initiations.
We have very briefly talked about compact forms, but we haven't decided, you know, for passing in QR codes, for particularly like the connection invitation and things like that. But we haven't yet nailed any of those down.
Any other thoughts or comments on the concepts this RFC touches on?
How about, are there any, looks as though all attributes that start with @ are reserved? So it's kind of, is it, are you using any JSON LD here?
Correct.
The only prefixes are the JSON-LD compatible ones, as in ID and type. Mm-hmm. We also have the concept of decorators, which are prefixed with a tilde. That is JSON-LD compliant, but not specifically JSON-LD.
So I'll run very quickly, just because, I mean, this was time-boxed more to the envelope level. And just to point out, essentially, what's packed inside an envelope is content. And what you're touching on is the content level, which is, essentially, we have a series of conventions that associate to our content level, which give us the baseline components for DIDCOM messages at an application layer to be processed. And the things we have present in all DIDCOM messages is a message type, which, yes, in a JSON serialization structure for DIDCOM messages is defined by the @type, and it is partly because it has, it's JSON LD sympathetic. We have another, Daniel Harman wrote a really good document basically describing the interop we have with JSON-LD, but it's more of a leaves room for direct JSON-LD support. It's not, I don't know how, are you on the call, Daniel, the best way to describe that? I guess it's not non-conformance, but it's not complete support. I'm not sure if Daniel's on the call.
He's not on the call. I've been looking for him. I haven't seen him.
Okay. And so anyway, message type and message ID and a JSON serialization are defined by @type and @id respectively. And then decorators are identified inside a DIDCOM message with a prefix of tilde. And those are the formats, those are the conventions we've basically established, because JSON is the format that we're working with now for DIDCOM messages, and that's the primary format.
Hey, this is Marcus. Does this support multiplexing, where a message is encrypted with some ephemeral key that is made available to multiple recipients?
So
yes,
but that's in the specific type of envelope that Kyle's going to talk about in just a minute. So the answer is yes, but it's mildly out of scope for the envelope sort of labeling or the envelope anatomy question.
Yeah, so essentially all of this RFC is supposed to describe is the two different layers and then the sub-formats that the two layers provide, or the two levels provide. So if that's where the conversation is segueing to, then perhaps I should give it to Kyle, unless anyone else has any other questions that are based on more general DIDCOM message anatomy.
All right.
Cool.
Any other questions, or shall we move on to the next topic? Next topic it is. Look at us, stay on schedule. Encrypted envelopes. Kyle, another person from Matter Global. That's two in a row.
Alrighty. Looks like things are working.
Good.
So as highlighted in Tobias's talk, this is focused specifically on the encryption envelope layer, not the content layer. The content layer is distinctly defined differently so that it can be extensible and can support many different things. So with that, we kind of highlight some of the general thinking and listed in here. So as this highlights here, originally called the wire level format, was an indie hype that was accepted, and so the current status of this is accepted. The specific idea behind this is we wanted a very common API that was usable for people to actually be able to encrypt and decrypt messages without having to worry about the encryption. They just needed to know how to consume the API, and so that was kind of the thinking behind this. This goes into kind of the highlights of how messages could be passed. This was originally from some of the work that we were doing very early on when we were discussing how things may be wrapped, and it was a good example to be able to show these types of things. And so it's just kind of been kept in here over time. Specifically to the question that you asked, Johnny Crunch, we've got an example right here. In terms of how it is, I'm not sure what the size of this message is, but this is a full example of, that's just the protected header. Technically, this would be the full example here that extends out there. And so it's this would be the format that's being sent over the transport layer. And this base64 encoded string is actually this part right here. Broken out. And so this is essentially the way the JWT format is defined, with a few slight modifications. To highlight those particular modifications, the things that have been done is we've added in some private headers here. So this IV and sender are private headers, which are compliant with the JWT spec being 4.3. But given that they are required rather than optional, that actually was not a spec compliant thing. That's not how I interpreted it, but after speaking with the spec writer, that's what we explained. Well, as the recipient's block originally was supposed to exist at this layer with the IV, ciphertext, and protected, but we moved it into the protected section so that we could get integrity protection to make sure that headers weren't being removed and not being detected. So that's kind of the highlights of that. There's a few algorithms in here to explain how the implementations work. There's multiple implementations. The one that exists in the Indie SDK is referenced here, but there's also a Python implementation that was created by the BC Gov folks, as well as there is a completely separate JavaScript implementation that was created by a Evernim employee, I believe. Is created by Dana Bloom, and the Evernim employee added the packaging. Joe is the person who did the packaging. So there's multiple implementations of this stuff based upon this spec that exists right here. But we do have some intentions of getting this to being fully JWT compliant. So before I jump into kind of what those changes are, I'll see if anybody has some questions. Alrighty. Go if there are not any changes for that. Let's pull this up here. So in pure dead math spec, we're looking to use this. And so there was a question brought up
about what are the specific changes, and so this is the best place to highlight those since I posted them. So to go fully spec compliant, replace the wording of off-crypt for, so is a take note here. We use off-crypt and non-crypt, which are not JWE or IANA registered algorithms. So we'd want to go more with what their thinking is, which would be ECDHSS plus ES C256K1. Essentially, that's a bunch of jargon for we're taking two static keys, wrapping the sender's static key with an ephemeral static key, which is the same thing as a non-crypt. And then we're using ChaCha 256 key wrapping algorithm. So there's one of the things for that. One of the specific things that we need to do is we need to actually add in a key wrapping algorithm. Something of interest right now is there's actually some poly 1305 implementations within IETF, but there's not an X implementation, which just means that the nonce is larger. As well as there's been requests by some UPort that we actually use X-Salsa rather than X-Cha-Cha specifically because the TweetNACL implementation, which was able to be built directly in JavaScript, supports X-Salsa but does not support X-Cha-Cha. So there's a few mild changes that are still being worked out there. I think be fine for a change. Yep, go ahead.
Is there a reason they can't use the libsodium.js?
Because they'd rather use TweetNACL because TweetNACL is much smaller. The lib, the other one is a much larger WASM file.
Okay. Makes sense.
Just my understanding. So, you know, I'll bring you into that conversation when we continue it forward more.
Yep.
Because I know you... We already had plans to pass you and Christian anyways. Moving forward, we also need to add an AAD function or section. This is spec compliant. So the idea behind it is the AAD would contain some string of some sort to verify that these headers are going to be not tampered with. So the thinking is that we'll be able to move recipients back to its normal spot. So it'd be protected IV, recipients, ciphertext, and tag, as well as an additional AAD. And the AAD would essentially be the KID's period concatenate. And so that would be a second tag in a way, just so that we can do verification of the recipients.
Is that the same thing that I proposed originally?
It's probably, yeah, I remember we had talked about that. Actually, I think we talked about doing the full, recipients block originally. And so then rather than doing that fully redundant with the KIDs, but yeah, it's very similar to the stuff that you posted originally. Let's take a look here. Yeah. So I mentioned that key wrapping algorithm. Rest of this stuff is basically just add stuff to specs and IANA registries and things of that nature, and some explanation as to what it is. And then it would technically be a JWE compliant implementation, but doesn't mean any of the JWE libraries would actually implement it. So that likely means that we would actually just need to go write our own JWE library. So that's kind of the bulk of the encryption format. I'm not sure if I hit kind of the topics that everybody was interested in or things of that nature. So any questions would be greatly appreciated.
Kyle, are you working on these changes to make that so we can stop saying the almost JWE and actually be able to say, oh, it's JWE compliant?
I sent a message off to the spec writers over at Microsoft, and I have not heard back with them yet. So I can follow up on it. That's one aspect of it. The other aspect is we need an actual key wrapping algorithm so that we can get rid of this IV here. And that key wrapping algorithm is going to be needs to be created by a cryptographer. So I've started those conversations showing up at the Sovereign Crypto call, and that's one of those things that I need to request of them. So that is the status of that.
Okay, so confirmation plus you need an actual algorithm, a key wrapping algorithm written, defined and written.
Yes.
Yep. Yeah.
There's, for what it's worth, the majority of people don't care that it's JWT compliant outside of like Aries and Diff. The only person I've heard with strong intent to make it JWT compliant is Daniel Buckner over at Microsoft. I believe that's because he's got to work with JWT writers. So that's the behind that.
Okay. Does anyone else have a perspective on that? How important that is, this work?
For the most part, I'll just be off in my own corner, get stuff done. You guys won't have to worry about it.
Well, there's going to be some changes when we actually get to the point where we can become compliant. There's also the fact that we could be standards track, meaning like we're already doing the thing we think will be accepted, but it isn't yet. So there's a couple of variants there. It feels like most people don't actually care. They just want it to work. And so there's a little bit of a balance between let's just move forward with something that works while we're trying to figure out what the next phase in the officially approved way should be versus trying to get there now.
So the other thing to factor in here that Kyle and I have discussed, and Kyle's been doing some really good work on this, is the rate in which the MLS spec evolves as well. So we've spoken about hypothetically if MLS spec does move quickly, which I can definitely see it not moving quickly based on the rate of standards. But if it were to move quickly, then perhaps if we are going to use MLS to provide the security at our encrypted envelope level, then we wouldn't bother with the re-implementation to a conformant JWE, only to throw it away for an MLS implementation.
Yeah, that's an important thing to highlight, is that we're looking at doing MLS specifically because right now, because we're using the OffCrypt format, which has two static keys that doesn't give you perfect forward secrecy for OffCrypt, there's some indirect perfect forward secrecy, but if you gain access to the private key, you still can read all messages that you're able to intercept. And so the MLS is one of the things that solves that. And so we're taking a look at that. A non-crypto.
Probably just really quickly to explain to everybody, MLS is messaging layer security, which is supposed to be a sister spec to transport layer security. If you go to the link that I just dropped into the chat, you'll see the current sort of state of the working group that is an ETF-based task force. So if anyone's interested in that, that's what we're talking about when we mean MLS.
And if you have any interests or questions that pop up later on, just feel free to reach out to me, and I can answer them for you. I'm fairly deep in the weeds, but I recognize that the majority of people just want to use pack and unpack, which is why it was designed this way. With that, I think I can cede the rest of my time and we can move forward.
Let's go back. Oops. Share. I'll go back to here. Sam, so we are early, so I'll check you off at 12:40 my time, and DIDCOM's transport, give an update on that, and that'll lead into Alexander's presentation.
Awesome. Okay, I'm going to share. I believe this is the right one.
There you go.
Okay, agent transports. This is a pretty small RFC. DIDComs is transport agnostic, but that doesn't mean that there aren't specific things that apply to various transports. So this is an attempt to document the two most commonly used transports and how it applies, with the goal that as more transports become common, that we can expand these definitions and make the, you know, these assumptions clear, right? There's things how they actually apply to them. And so let me go through them and then we can come back for them. Talking about this, there are a couple of pending notes and other things that we might be able to adjust here. I'll talk about those in a second, but that's weird. I think I could have sworn there was a different one. Nope. Okay, never mind. So here is the here's the agent transports. The idea here is that is to sort of draw out the assumptions. For example, we've got HTTP or HTTPS, and this is a very common one for obvious familiarity reasons. And this this standardizes on the fact that messages are in the standard form are transferred via a post. This is common to using the post verb instead of a get, or one of the other ones helps avoid like caching issues or firewall caching issues. And so post is commonly used. Here's the MIME type for the post request, and I had updated this, except that this was designed to reflect that, and I have a PR or I have an update to this, which will update this to DIDComs envelope encrypted or DIDComs envelope ENC and for a standard MIME type. And again, MIME types are specific to this because not all transports have MIME types. So that's a good example of that. A received message should be responded to with a 202 accepted. This indicates that the request was received but not necessarily processed. A 200 okay is also allowed. The 200, the 202 is a little bit more specific because it sort of indicates that hey, I really do, you know, speak DIDComs, and I've received your message, and this is what's making sense. So post requests are considered transmit only by default. No agent messages will be returned in the response. And there's a note that this behavior may be modified with additional signaling. And we have some, that's where the return route RFC comes in place, that you could indicate that the inbound request should be used for a return route. But by default, it's one way. And then using HTTPS with TLS 1.2 or greater provides a perfect form of secrecy on the transmission leg. So if you desire perfect form of secrecy, which is a good idea, then you want to use HTTPS with TLS 1.2. And there's two known implementations that do this. This doesn't necessarily need to be an exhaustive list. And in fact, we may want to amend a table of known agents to actually include sort of which transports the agents support instead of listing them here. But in the meantime, it's here for informative purposes. So that's HTTP. WebSockets are very efficient. And so and can be bidirectional, which is really nice. So each message is transmitted individually in an encryption envelope. And the trust comes from the envelope, not the socket connection itself, right? So you're going to want to evaluate, you want to unpack each message as it comes through, and that's where you get your trust from. They're considered transmit only by default, which feels a little weird, but this helps standardize the signal handling with what should actually happen here. It's possible that a client would open up a connection to the to the server doing DIDComs, the agent, and want to transmit multiple messages and not really being expected not wanting to receive any in return. And so the additional signaling also applies here. Using secure web sockets with TLS 1.2 or greater, this is similar to the guidance here. We'll provide perfect forward secrecy. There's a reference implementation here. So those are the two common ones. Any question about those before we talk about the other remaining details? Comments, suggestions, objections?
I object.
Is this the part where we're talking about, like, say, group chat? Like, if you're multiple agents involved in it? Or is this just how you're talking to agents?
This is just how you, this is just the lower transport levels, right? So if you go down one level under in the stack underneath envelopes, you get to the transport layers, and this is just the transport layers. So like the multiple party chat, stuff like that would actually happen in the content level and possibly in the encryption envelope if there are multiple, you know, signatures or multiple destinations for the message. This is just how the message is actually moved from one point to another.
Realistically, I know they're lightweight, but I think it'd be good for us to separate the HTTPS and WebSocket stuff from the actual transport hype, because the transport's more like a concept, and then the HTTPS and WebSockets would be more features. Even though they're going to be super small, and I can help you out with that.
I'm totally not opposed to that. That would leave this RFC as the outline and as a pointer to the other ones, and then the other ones can exist on their own, which would be just fine. So other transports, the idea here is that other transports are defined, that they are also documented, and if we're splitting these out, then we would simply link to sort of known transports and list them there. So the idea is that these are not the only transports you can use, but common ones. And then anything that needs to be updated about these over time can be done so. So we also clarify message routing, that this is sort of one leg at a time. And so message routing is how you handle more than one leg at a time if you have a firewall scenario or other types of routing that you wish to have. We also talk about the message context, and that the transport is part of the security trust context for evaluating the security of messages. And some agents or use cases may want to consider the transports in when they're considering the security context of the message itself. And then this is a reference as well to the agent test suite, which is has not been moved over as a code base yet, but that is the intent, and that we can figure out the right tests involved in order to be able to test DIDCOM's transports, so that it's pretty easy to, when you're developing something, to tell whether you are compliant with the transport or not. And then here's some basic rationale and everything else, but yes. Any questions about this generally?
How about going back to the perfect forward secrecy and TLS? So the keys being used for the TLS handshake, are those at all related to the keys being used within the envelopes?
They are not at this point. I lost several months of my life trying to figure out how to make that work. Right. And the short answer for anyone that hasn't heard it is that the TLS spec perfectly allows for the use of keys of the types that we're dealing with, you know, keys out of DID documents, for example. And that is fully within the TLS spec itself. The downside is that the common implementations of TLS, OpenSSL, for example, make assumptions about the process by which we should validate certificates that makes it very difficult in practice. So I see a bright, shiny future where we can do this, but we're not quite there yet. Kyle, do you have any insight on MLS? And
what do you mean? Is
how and how? Well, and how it applies to perfect forward secrecy?
So it rotates the keys using what they refer to as the axolotl ratcheting scheme. So the idea is basically you generate a new key every time, but you can verify that it was derived from a specific key, which is how you get the perfect forward secrecy, but still linked to an identity and therefore get authentication.
So it strikes me that it would be incredibly useful to, in the MLS spec, to make sure that the same assumptions are not made for implementations, and we don't end up with the same library type thing. So it would be interesting to figure out where we can tie into the MLS community such that when libraries are developed, we can help library developers avoid the same pitfalls that TLS fell into.
So I know they intend to do mutual authentication, and one of the code spec authors Nick Sullivan, who works at Cloudflare, has actually spoke quite a bit on this subject about how he believes that separating the encryption into the messaging format is a much better way of handling it than baking it into the transport layer. So my guess is it will work as you expect. And from everything I see, that's true.
That'd be awesome. Okay.
So one thing, if you don't want to wait for MLS, there's there is a paper call or a protocol called Mega OLM that is basically the Signal protocol, but for groups, that's implemented by Matrix. So that might be another thing that if you don't want to wait for MLS, you could try looking at that I've started looking at recently.
That sounds pretty interesting. The biggest, so something worth highlighting on all this is the biggest thing is how do we get everybody to agree on one? It seems like a lot of the time where it's like you put everybody in the sandbox and then one runs away and then you have to go chase them down. And when you get them back, there's three gone again. So it's a little bit of herding cats and stuff like that.
Yes. And
okay. Hang on, Sam. Robert's got his hand up.
Yeah, hi, Robert here. Just wanted to ask one question regarding this transportation layer and how the agent can discover which transport it's supported. So if you have multiple ones, how I can figure out that? Is that part of this RFC or is on another layer?
So it's related to this. The DID document itself in the service pointer will contain the endpoints. And the endpoint, by nature of the of the URI used, should indicate which transport's actually being used.
That's only for the entrance into the domain, though. But it remains true, yeah. But use a different mechanism other than the doc within the domain.
No, you would generally use the DID doc between the two that are talking. Your routing agent and your edge agent. So it's still going to be in the DID doc.
We should mention here that there are within a domain, meaning all of the agents related to the user, there are multiple ways of doing it. There are certainly, you can be externally compatible while doing something separately internally if you have a sort of a full stack solution. But it is also a very valid solution in, to use DID docs within the domain in order to help agents relate to each other and understand what those transports would be.
Does right. that mean that each individual agent gets its own DID?
It can if you choose to go there.
Pairwise DID. So if you have a routing agent, it might have a pairwise DID to an edge agent, and that's how the two of them know how to communicate, and all the routing agent is doing sending all the messages.
It might also be an nwise DID, meaning each agent has one DID that it shares with all of the other agents, just to simplify that process. But yes, that is one possibility, and it is the and that's what you do under that scenario.
I think we're going to need to be more specific than one scenario, because what this is going to cause is that some implementations will do things. So say, for example, I'm running a mobile app, and that implementation assumes that it's using keys and interacts within its domain by doing keys. And then another mobile agent assumes DID docs. That's going to cause an incompatibility there in terms of identifiers of how I'm identifying different agents.
It's also that should not be exposed. That shouldn't be exposed across domains, though, Kyle. That is basically an within the domain, and so that it's implementation specific. Absolutely, for interoperability, it can't be exposed outside. But sure, within the domain, it could.
Well, and that's where what you're doing is you're basically creating full stack solutions for where domain has to use only use implementations that are compliant with each other. So say, for example, you know, the Osmo app is using DIDs, but Street Cred is using keys to identify agents. What that's going to mean is that the routing agent is going to have to recognize both implementations. And if it only chooses one, then it won't be able to work with one app. but it will be able to work.
Right, but the routing agent could be tied to the one mobile app, and that's the way you use it. I mean, that's a perfectly valid scenario. It depends on what your goal is with your mobile agent and your cloud agent and things like that.
It's also important to recognize that there are two layers of domain that we've talked about. One is purely conceptual, meaning all of the agents that work on behalf of me. The other one is very, very application specific, meaning how all the things that I use communicate. And we have not yet pinned down precisely where those barriers sit. For example, I might have a mobile agent with a cloud agent related to it, and I have a totally separate agent at home. They're all part of my sort of conceptual domain, except that they relate to each other sort of in an extra or a cross-domain manner. We haven't really gotten specific about that, and we can decide if we want to in the future. But the answer is probably some sort of layered thing where there's sort of the individual domains that are possible, and then sort of the larger scope as viewed by the user.
Yeah. It sounds like we haven't really made a decision on this, so we're going to need to bring it up in another talk, because I can see where you're going to actually need both now that I think about it. Like, for example, if I'm using DIDs, that's going to work very well in a corporate environment because a user is going to maintain multiple devices, but they're technically a single agent of the entire corporation. Whereas if I'm representing my domain, then I'm going to have, a device represent an agent of my domain. So that's where it's going to get a little bit tricky. And I just want to make sure that we aren't, siloing based upon implementation here, and that we're still keeping everything interoperable. So I don't have to use one app with one routing agent. I can choose a different app with a different routing agent.
Yes, and there's some deeper concepts in there. We should revisit the concept of domains in more depth.
Yeah, I mean, as long as we're continuing to use message layer, messages in a consistent way, it's a lot easier to get there.
Yeah.
To get the implementations, it becomes now more a what are you doing with a DID doc and how are you managing that?
Yeah.
But yes, I think we can move on from that.
Okay. Awesome. Other questions about this?
Yes, I have a question.
Please.
I'm Alex, by the way. Okay, so my question is, I heard somewhat earlier in the discussion, somebody say that we might want to use the keys from TLS on a wire, on the wire message level. Is that correct?
We had discussed using the keys that relate to the DID document in TLS.
Yeah, it's the other way around.
Okay. Okay, I see. But is that not confusing different layers, or?
It can be. There actually is some value in doing that. One of them, for example, is that in the case of using this for TLS, we're actually more or less ignoring the certificate that whether the certificate is valid or not. We're only using it for transport level security. So there's some complexities there, or some nuance that could be avoided if we're using keys of a different source. But really, you can use HTTPS to get proof of work secrecy on a hop, but the real trust of the message doesn't come from the certificate used to say with TLS, but rather the encryption around the encrypted envelope itself.
Yeah. Right.
One of the advantages of using keys back and forth is that you could avoid a double encryption tax, which you're having to do in order to use TLS on that.
Okay. Thank you.
Yeah. And we've thought about this before, and I work a lot with IPFS, and IPFS in the latest libP2P actually supports self-sign X509 certificates for the handshake but that's TLS 1.3, and that's a ephemeral Diffie-Hellman key exchange. I think the challenge is that it's this walk down attack, which is that, well, you have to explicitly state which protocol you support in the DID document. And if you allow like the TLS walk down, actually, like, you can suddenly, it's going to be like, for instance, let's say I only support EDT5519, but then your only supports RSA, then how do you actually create a handshake in that the protocol in order to authenticate?
Yes, and that's one of the difficulties that has not yet been solved yet.
With exotic crypto.
Yeah.
That's how we do it.
With new math. Yep.
But that's going to be like the challenge is to explicitly state, and you have to then actually support that protocol.
So the way I see it, if I want to talk to you, I have to use your keys, right? We have this problem now, like, for example, if I want to talk to a China server, China doesn't support TLS 1.2, right? They have their own encryption algorithms. Therefore, I have to encrypt my traffic with their, you know, cryptography to send them data. And the reverse is true. If they want to talk to me, they have to use mine. So I would suggest that whoever the receiver is, you have to talk their language. And so if you don't have a key, like if I'm the receiver and I only support ED25519 keys, you're going to have to generate one. But if you only support RSA and I want to, you know, connect with you, I'm going to have to generate an RSA key. It's going to be messy, but that's probably the only way to do it.
Yeah, so are you saying that we encrypt then with a like asymmetric key, or are you saying that I generate a key just so that I can then generate a symmetrical key with them using
elliptic? So the whole point, we don't do encryption with elliptic curve keys, right? We just use a signature. So RSA would be the same way. You should use it in the same method to do the handshake.
So
it's just for the authentication part, right, of the DID doc.
Oh, okay. You're just talking about the signature?
Yeah.
Okay, that makes sense.
Okay, we'll stop it there. And we'll move on to the next topic. So, Sam, yeah, thanks. Stop sharing. Alex, over to you to talk about, now that we've got the intro, if you will, intro to transports, let's talk about DIDCOM over XMPP.
Yes, just a second, getting my screen up here. Okay, so
you might want to introduce yourself, since you, I think this is the second time you've talked, and the first was about 2 minutes ago.
All right. Okay. So I'm Alex Blom. I'm working with TNO in Holland. I'm from a startup called Blockzone, and we're working with TNO on an interesting use case together with an insurance company, and while planning a live implementation of DIDCOM, we came across the subject of firewalls. And so we decided to tackle that with XMPP as the transport protocol. So let me just... Okay, there we go. Okay, so there's a hype, and you see the link under the title here. Which you can go to and which I will show at the end. But basically, I thought it would be easier for everybody to, if I just took out the main points and put them in four slides, so it's going to be very brief. So first of all, the use case is a consumer contacting a customer service agent from his health insurance company. So that leads to... questions about his identity, of course, and then if the consumer wants to convey his identity information to the service agent, he cannot do so because there's firewall problems. So we use XMPP as the underlying protocol to bridge the firewalls. XMPP has a long history of dealing with firewalls. It's very effective. It can deal with all sorts of firewall situations. It also is rich in features. Push notifications when offline, stay alive messages, keep a port open, etc. Devices offline, multiple devices, new devices, everything, copying, archiving policies. It's all there. And it has a very strong open source community behind it. So we thought that would be practical to use it, because it's going to save everybody a lot of work. So how does it work? A DITCOMWIRE message will be sent as a plain text XMPP message without any additional identifiers. And we use a specific Jabber ID, a JID short for that, which basically looks like an email address. And we would reserve, we would start the domain with DID to set it apart from regular Jabber IDs. So the DIT doc would contain the specific DITCOM over XMPP endpoint, as you see it here, service endpoint with XMPP for XMPP, and it would be bob@dit.bar.com. And what else would we need? A translator. Any messages coming in on this special DITCOM over XMPP endpoint would interpret it as a DITCOM wire message and hand it forward. Then there's the question of how do we generate this specific DIT Jabber ID? Well, one thing we could do in the case of this use case, for instance, we have Alice talking to the insurance company, and her DITCOM over XMPP service endpoint would be alice@dit.foo.com. And another way to do it would be to use a random user part and then rotate it at intervals. It's possible it makes things a little bit more complex, but it adds some privacy, of course. About privacy, well, what's going on in this situation, of course, is the insurance company asking the client for privacy-related information. So it's not really sure how much you gain in privacy when you use a random address. And last ingredients would be an internal register that correlates human-to-human communications to DITCOM messages, so that you know when something happens on the DITCOM layer, human-to-human communications can react to that. So that's all.
I've got a quick question. You mentioned that you're using a plain text wire message. Did you mean the envelope or the content?
I meant that there's different messages that XMPP uses, and one is the plain text messages. So that's where people actually communicate. So if I say hello there, it would be a plain text message as opposed to a presence message.
I just am not sure which message you're referring to. Do you mean the plain text content message or the plain text or do you mean like the envelope format?
No, the envelope is sent as a plain text message.
Okay. So yeah, I think
base 64.
Yeah.
Okay. Did that answer your question?
Yes, I believe so.
Okay. Right. Okay. Any other questions?
So I'm trying to understand the scope of this. So that means if this becomes, you would expect that this would go in an end user, like an interoperable DITCOM. So Alice talking to Bob or Alice talking to Faber, Alice would have XMPP in the DID doc that it gives to Faber, and Faber would have to be able to send XMPP messages. Is that what you're thinking?
Yes. Alice would have an XMPP client sending DITCOM messages, sending DIT, which serve as a medium of transport for the wire messages.
So I'm not really XMPP. I'm sorry to interrupt, Stephen. Did you go ahead?
Yeah, go ahead.
I was just looking at the example there at the top of your the page here of the service endpoint. And this is where my lack of knowledge of XMPP is the domain name, how it's being resolved there. And so is that a specific address for Alice, alice@did.com? Obviously, that'd be something that would be real. But is it going through the domain name service to resolve that?
There's an XMPP server. So it's a server client situation. There's an XMPP server which resolves alice@did.foo.com as a message that needs to be forwarded to Alice.
So I guess I'm recommending that particular scheme needs to fit in with our routing so that it's obfuscated and it's non-correlatable, like an agency would be, right? A routing agency where I could send it to a DID address at a well-known XMPP service endpoint, and then that DID, and I guess, is that the other example here? We have the DID is below, so that's where it's sending it to that DID at that service endpoint, or at least a generic service endpoint that then as it decrypts and unpacks the message, it knows how to route it from there.
I'm not sure what your question is.
I guess I'm just walking through the motions in my head, and maybe others can chime in if I'm
going. Okay, so look at it as an application on your phone, right? And this application has two XMPP clients on it, with two XMPP addresses. So on the one address, it will receive human-to-human communications, and on the other address, it will receive the wire messages. So the application knows that when it receives a message on alice@did.foo.com, it needs to treat it not as a human-to-human message, but as a DIDCOM wire message. So it hands it on, and it's unpacked, and then it does whatever is being done to DIDCOM messages.
Okay. Yep, it's essentially the same as an HTTP endpoint, service endpoint. Is that true with everybody
else? Right, it replaces the HTTP endpoint, because we're looking at a situation where there's no web server running on the mobile phone, and there's a firewall in between. So that's a lot of reasons not to be able to use an HTTP endpoint.
So there's some nuance here in how XMPP works that's worth addressing. And one of them is that you could use an XMPP address, and that would comprise the entire route, meaning it could skip all of the other routes in between. That we normally talk about with DID communications. But in doing so, you have the problem of having to deal with the fact that it's like a known endpoint, there's correlatable traffic.
Right.
You could also apply this in a couple of more minor ways, meaning you might have an agency on the outside or a forwarding agent that accepts HTTP, but then uses XMPP internally in order to get around the firewall problem just for the last hop. Or you could even have an XMPP that is serves as the routing agent and is more generic, and it receives a wrapped message that then also uses whatever transport, which could also be XMPP internally. So I think the safest way to use this is either as a last mile route, meaning the relationship between, say, the phone and the routing agent, or in between the public and the routing agent itself, to avoid the correlation problem. There's some application and nuance because of some of the features that XMPP has, and it would be easy to create a highly correlatable scenario on accident. You've talked about the rotating address, which could also be a useful way to do it. But you could even, if you wanted to avoid that complexity, you could just use a routing agent in between, even if the routing agent also used XMPP.
Yeah. So that's an interesting suggestion, because we've been wondering about the correlation, the danger of correlation. So what would be the danger of correlation? What should we be afraid of?
The general idea is that if I have a different ID, a different DID, a pairwise DID that I create for each of my relationships. So I have one with with the hospital doctor scenario that you're talking about, but I also have a totally separate one with someone else. If I have the same endpoint that's associated with both of those DIDs, then I'm really trivially correlatable. It's easy to figure out that I'm the same one at both. If you have something that's more generic, then it's a lot harder to figure that out. So it's mostly a privacy scenario and allowing people to keep different things private.
Okay, so you're suggesting, sorry to interrupt. So one thing you're saying is that we should have a separate DITCOM over XMPP service endpoint for every peer DIT relationship.
That would help avoid correlation by endpoint, yes.
Okay. All right.
Now,
what we frequently talk about is that there would be some sort of agentsrs.com endpoint, and it just receives messages for thousands of people, millions of people, and it is able to decrypt the envelope of the message and see who it's for, so that what external traffic to the internet is seeing is just lots of very similar looking messages going into this endpoint. And then that endpoint figuring out where to route them after that.
Yes, but then there's probably still firewalls to be bridged, right? So
there may be, but not necessarily. When we use the term routing agent, we're assuming one of the assumptions with that term is that agent is capable of receiving messages directly to it. So if you use a routing agent, then you can receive a message from anybody. The routing agent can. And then if you're communicating to, there's a couple different ways that we've talked about routing around the firewall issue. Using XMPP is certainly one that can work. The advantage of doing that is that your client application wouldn't have to implement anything HTTP. It could simply only implement XMPP. As a transport in talking with the routing agent that it's using, and then anything else can be used separately. The interesting part there is that if a mobile application uses XMPP as a transport to its routing agent, then it can actually tell everyone else that it accepts HTTP as a transport, but hands it the endpoint of the routing agent itself. The advantage then is that even if not everyone supports XMPP as a transport for DIDCOMs, you could still receive messages from anyone else who support maybe HTTP or WebSockets, or whatever happens to be the most common. And then that message can then be relayed over XMPP to avoid the firewall issues, specifically in relation to the mobile phone and the routing agent.
Yes.
Sorry to interrupt, but if we go back to our use case where both the customer service agent and the customer are behind firewalls, would that add anything? Because we'd have a XMPP server just sitting in the middle and routing one XMPP message needed because there's a firewall to bridge, and then another XMPP message going out again needed because there's a firewall to be bridged.
Yes, but if you have one routing agent in between, and either one of them can actually use everyone would need the routing agent on the inbound. The answer is that there are using routing agents, it's really easy to overcome the firewall problem. If you want to avoid routing agents entirely, you can do it all only with XMPP, but that would preclude use of or communicating with any agent that happened to not support XMPP as a protocol. So you can, and if you do that, then you can solve the problem generally. But what it doesn't do is allow for any cross protocol implementations to exist.
Okay. Yeah. Good suggestion.
So, what I mean though is that if you had a routing agent that speaks both XMPP and HTTP, then it kind of doesn't matter. You can the agents that are transmitting the messages can use XMPP if they can, or they can use HTTP or HTTP that will then be tunneled over the XMPP for the next leg,
right.
and everybody right. can get along.
Everybody's happy.
It's important to realize that along the hops of routing agents, there is absolutely zero requirement that the same transport is used for every hop.
Yeah.
The message is transport agnostic to allow that to happen, and so that allows you to use the most appropriate transport in the most appropriate place.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. Good suggestion.
Awesome. Yeah. Thank you very much. I think we'll hold there. And what I wanted to do was, we've got 10 minutes left. I thought we would open that up for discussion. So if anyone has any particular topics, now's the time. We can talk about what to talk about next and, other things people want to hear. Go ahead, Kyle.
Thank you. Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt. What I was thinking about was within transports, not just with XMPP, but I also realized this is going to be a common problem as we're defining more and more transports. We need to be careful about how we're defining the endpoints. So, for example, it would be one thing to set an HTTP endpoint to be agentsrs.com/ did one or something like that, and then have a separate did for every single time and use a separate API endpoint. That then becomes a correlatable point because I can perform traffic analysis based upon how many messages are being sent to that endpoint. So essentially what I'm saying is, within the transport layer, if you are running as an agency or domain endpoint, you should be operating for multiple people, not one individual per communication. Does that align with what we're thinking? And
yes, I think, I think that's where we got to quite a while ago, which is you're just sending a message to an endpoint, and that message is encrypted for the agency's RS endpoint. Only after it decrypts the message does it see who the message is intended and can route from there. So externally, someone looking at the traffic would not see it based on the URL. I think that's the intention we've always had.
Yes, but we should make that explicit. And I think that the points there is that an agent should probably only have one endpoint per protocol. So one URL if it's HTTP, or one address if it's XMPP, in doing so, it avoids the temptation to assign specific ones, like Kyle mentioned, to then become a correlatable problem.
Yeah,
I guess.
So would that be part of your transport hype?
Yeah,
I don't know whether that's exactly where that fits.
Hey Drummond, no. You said one URL per protocol per relationship, and that's a bad idea. Because then the URL, if it's tagged to the relationship, can it either needs to be randomly unique, but it needs to be not correlatable. So it can be.
That was the point I was after. Was you said one URL per protocol, and I'm going, well, you start sharing that URL with all your relationships, and you're correlated.
No, you're right. So what I meant was is that when you have something like a routing agent, they need to not necessarily to make sure that the URL the routing agent presents on behalf of someone is not unique to the person it's going to be routing to.
Got it. Yeah. Okay.
But you're right. Yeah. I said something that I didn't intend either. And so,
That's what I was catching.
So with
but there's some nuance we should. So where should that live? We need a discussion of this. Should that live in the transports RFC? Should that live in the
Yeah, I'm not sure. RFC?
I would say in the concepts would be where we'd highlight it. And then what I'm thinking is that we define specifically, an API endpoint for it, so that it's common at least. So like HTTP always ends with didcom. XMPP always uses the name didcom or something like that.
Well, we need to have the conversation. We only got a couple more minutes. Let's put this in the transport hype. And then if we externalize HTTP and WebSockets, as you suggested, Kyle, then we can add a section that talks about avoiding correlation with endpoints, with transport endpoints. And if we find that there's a better place to put it later, we can move it. But let's start with it there.
Perfect. Yeah. We can continue on issues as well, but I see Robert raised his hand.
I just wanted to quickly say, someplace I think we need the overall, call it privacy by design architecture that's being followed here to be documented, because many people come in from that angle.
That's not a bad idea.
Yeah.
So just have a concepts RFC called privacy by design.
Yeah.
That sort of encapsulates those.
Yep.
That's a pretty good idea.
I'd be willing to help with that one.
There's one that's already been written a while ago that could be updated from the Sovereign Foundation. So I can go grab that. I know where it's at, and I can turn it into a...
Okay.
That'd be super cool, Kyle. Let me know after you've done that. I'll take a look.
Okay.
Yeah.
Robert, your hands up.
Yeah, thanks. So you asked for the proposition of the topic. So I would like to suggest something. I don't know if that was already the case. If so, then probably that's not valid. But I would like to raise a discussion about the pure architecture of this project, because a lot of stuff comes from indie, and basically this is what you guys already did so far. And I'm not sure how many people on this call is familiar with all those details, including, you know, the agents, the different types of the agents, the architecture, how they basically communicate. We had within the application of the project a short kind of picture or the diagram of the architecture, how we are imagining it. But if it will be possible to have one of the topic for further calls, just to briefly explain what is the current architecture, what is the current understanding of the architecture, and then basically trigger discussions about that. What do you think?
I think that's excellent. In particular, I'd love to hear about assumptions that we might have made that need to be corrected. I think that that would be a really useful discussion to have.
Because, for example, in a project in Minerva in Lab 10 Collective, we have own architecture of this concept of digital wallet and different components around it, which, you know, a lot of components are very similar to that, what we are talking about here. And, of course, I would like to kind of map it to existing architecture, which comes from indie, because I'm not super familiar with the... with this, what was done so far. So maybe it will be a chance to challenge some assumptions and go through a different way of thinking about those stuff.
Okay. Next week, the thought was connection initiate protocol. And the idea was to go sort of over how we establish a connection. But I think what you're saying is you want to go another step back further to more underlying concepts and ideas that are behind the indie agent, and then we continue to move forward to, okay, here's how we got to connection initiate and so on.
Yeah, Sam, basically to have a big picture of
that.
Yeah.
Yep.
Speaking
okay,
of
thank you.
There's also discussions too that I think relate but not specifically to DIDCOMS about wallet design, for example, and that would be a good one to lay out and say here's the design for the Aries wallet and get feedback on that, so that if there's something that we haven't we can surface those early.
Could we have a discussion next time on the Aries wallet, because I have a lot of ideas on how to improve the security for that, and I'm going to be writing RFCs for that. So I'd like feedback, but it would be good to have like a discussion on that.
We probably need an overview for the whole project that identifies the various components. For example, a reference agent, libraries, wallet design, et cetera. And then we can dive into each of them separately.
Well, the stuff I'm talking about is like, you know, where do you put, what's the best way to store the key to the wallet or keys to the wallet? And then two, can we segregate parts of the wallet so that based on the key that was used to open the wallet, you are only allowed to access your parts of the wallet that you've been granted access? So
that's a little deep. That's deep until we have an overall. I think that's what people are saying, is it's too early to do that. In the calls we're having, I think we need to get the overall group to have a better, to be more comfortable in contributing ideas and challenging the foundation and understanding the foundation and challenging it and improving it. And that's, I think, what Robert's talking about.
So when
Yeah, sorry to mention about digital wallet, because actually in my head, digital wallet is something else. And actually you guys are defining as a wallet, because for you, wallet is basically a storage for the keys. And in our concept, digital wallet is this picture of the all the components which actually makes the user be able to interact with this decentralized world. So maybe we should use a different naming for that, like personal digital assistant or something, but that's another topic.
We've used is agent, but you're right. It'll help draw out those differences, and then we can figure out if the names need to be adjusted so that we're all talking about the same thing.
Exactly. My point was to have this overall big picture on all the components which we are talking about, how they are related to each other, how they talk to each other, and what stuff is doing what.
So my comment was just related to that. I think DIDCOM only in this Aries project, or is it more broadly known, and where is it documented underneath the DIT spec or anything else like that? Because this is supposed to be interoperable between all blockchains and all solutions, correct? SSI world?
I mean, that's the goal we're trying to get to. It's definitely not part of the DIT spec, because the DIT spec isn't about, it's about a data model and methods for accessing it. This is a place to promote interoperability and DIDCOMs as the starting place to achieve that interoperability.
Okay, so
German, do you want to talk about that?
Only known here then, right? Sorry, go ahead.
Well,
kind of. We bring it up in DIF all the time, but we're still working through this stuff. As I've said before, it's a delicate process, and Sam and I have been leading the charge along with Drummond and Tobias, and I know Stephen Curran and John Jordan. We're hitting it from many different angles from this community to try and engage with the the DIF community and bring it out broader. But
so there are two broad communities and a couple of outliers. The two broad communities are the Aries project here. And we care very much about sort of standardizing DIDCOMs. The other community that the conversations are happening in is the Decentralized Identity Foundation, the DIF. And then there's a few people that we would like to be involved that don't appear to show up regularly to either one of them. And so that's also a difficult part. One of the difficulties is that the people in the Aries world, and it's mostly there's not a lot of nefariousness here. I think it's mostly just some cultural differences that have resulted in it being semi-difficult to get the two groups together and talking. One of the conversations, or what we're trying to figure out, is where can these conversations actually happen in a place that's amenable to both communities, and that has licensing terms that are amenable to both communities as well. And so that's a difficult conversation, and Drummond is trying to help work some of those out. Kyle has done a whole lot of work here as well. So.
That's great. I guess one of the particulars, I just got back from IMS Global Conference, and the block certs, in the educational community is getting a lot of steam. And so, but I'm hoping that through the DID spec and this new DIDCOM concept, that there's going to be some convergence of interoperability there. And so I'm just kind of seeing, are we talking in terms of the other blockchain solutions and being able to communicate with them through this DIDCOM mechanism, and are we looking to support the way that they're communicating?
So with regards to block certs specifically, Kim Duffy has been a part of DIF. She's now one of the steering committee members, and she is actively engaged in that community. So I would assume that they are well, at least she's aware of it, and that she's bringing these kind of concepts back to them. But the idea of supporting everybody's wire level format is going to be really difficult, because I can identify to you right now three different ones just off the top of my head. And two of those exist just on the Ethereum platform alone.
Right. And that's why I'm hoping that through the DID spec, particularly, there's some convergence, because everybody's kind of looking toward that as a common denominator. Is that true?
It won't happen in the DID spec, but we're hoping to leverage the commonality of the DID spec in order to get to the point where there is a DID spec like thing for communication that we're calling DIDCOMs right now.
I have to point out, there's an incredible parallel here with IP as a protocol and addressing format, and TCP/IP, right? Because there's DID. DIDs by themselves are an identifier format and a metadata discovery. It's identifier syntax and metadata discovery format, the DID document, right? And a specification for how to write DID methods, but they don't, there's no protocol component to interoperability, which is why this layer we're working on here is so bloody important. Yeah. It almost feels like the giant sucking sound of everyone going, we need interop at this layer. And yes, diff is going over it. And this, I had several people in the diff community remark to me recently, it's like, oh, Aries is screwing everything up. And we're like, what? You know, I'm thinking to myself, wait a minute, Aries is trying to help come together to fix the problem, right?
Yeah.
So there's still some messiness in front of us to figure out how we do get engage everyone in the conversation. We're trying as hard as we can, working as fast as we can. Anyone else who wants to help with that, let us know.
Yeah, that's, I just really appreciate kind of where that is. So appreciate it.
With that, we'll close off the meeting for today. Thank you all for participating.
Thank you.
Back next week, same time.
Thanks, everybody.
Very well run call.
Thanks, guys. All.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Awesome. Thanks, guys.
Bye-bye.